It is the Business News Hour, and this is what we do at least once a week. We go out with a thought leader, and we do Out to Lunch. And we are out to lunch today at Jesse's Embers on Ingersoll in the heart of Des Moines. And who else to ask out to lunch than the mayor of the city of Des Moines, Frank County. Frank, welcome. Nice to have you here, man.
Absolutely. Good to be back.
Isn't this a great place?
Oh, it is a great place.
You know, I love the intimacy of this. And we have some fabulous restaurants in Des Moines, locally owned restaurants in Des Moines. But this is such a throwback to another era.
Oh, absolutely. And remember, you know, our parents that used to stop in here and meet their buddies in here after work. And my brother used to come in here and meet his friends. And, of course, he's about 10 years older than I am. So, you know, he was always kind of a generation ahead. But this has been a mainstay of this Ingersoll corridor for a really long time. Really a memory for so many people in and around Des Moines.
And, you know, it was really great. The West Side Chamber of Commerce just this year named Jesse's Embers as the Business of the Year. And Marty and Dina and the crew here who have been working this place for a long time, what a well-deserved award.
No, absolutely. Marty's done a great job in actually keeping the feel of this place from the past. It hasn't changed an incredibly lot,
right.
But it's clean, it's good food, and really welcoming staff.
We are at Jesse's Embers, ladies and gentlemen, obviously. Good stuff. We're out to lunch. All right, let's talk a little bit. Tell me about Frank County. I've watched you for a long time as a mayor of this city. This largest city in the state of Iowa. Tell us about you. Where you come from? How did all this get started? And give us that story.
You know, I remember I came back to Des Moines from Ames, and my dad wanted me to try out our business, our family business, and we were, you know, in readywear and outerwear, and had a store on Walnut Street and a factory down on Southwest 5th, and then stores in Nebraska and Iowa and in lease departments. And so it was quite an education. We were not only retailers, we were also manufacturers. And so we would sell to the market in New York and Montreal, and we would also buy. We had, hundreds of manufacturers of ready-to-wear and also fur and leather garments. And so it was quite an education to not only do that, but meet customers from all across three states.
Well, I was going to say that must have been a huge educational opportunity. You weren't insulated or isolated. You had this global reach with so many different kinds of people.
Oh, absolutely. And it, it teaches you something about people. I mean, we used to think that about 99% of our customers were happy, but the 1% or 2% that never could be satisfied, you had to smile at everybody and try to meet their needs and take care of their issues and their problems. I mean, you became a counselor as well as a purveyor of merchandise, and hopefully to meet their needs and satisfy their needs. And so it really was, to your point, a real education to meet people, Nebraskans and Iowans and people from Illinois and right in the heartland, and to see what's going on. Now, one of the other things that was interesting, my dad sort of demanded of me. He said, you know, we have a business and we are here in Des Moines and we're across Iowa. But he said, you know, it's not just about having a job and earning a living. To make your community better, you have to give back. And so he always urged me to get involved in the United Way, get involved in the American Heart Association, Red Cross, Cancer Society. I mean, all of those things, which I did. And I also started getting involved in some of the business groups and promoting downtown and, you know, let's make downtown more exciting, more inviting, and try to do some things. And I then started serving on boards and commissions. And I started with the Convention Center Board, which was the new convention center, which is, you know, now where the YMCA is. And then
I remember when that went up. That was quite the deal.
And so I did that from the 80s and then into the 90s. And then I had an opportunity to serve on the Planning and Zoning Commission. And I had an interest in what we were doing and how we were getting there. And then I became the chair of the Planning and Zoning Commission. And we wrote a new comprehensive plan for the city of Des Moines called the 2020 Plan. And which was sort of a something that I thought needed to be done because they hadn't written a new comprehensive plan since 1963 or 5 or something like that. So it had been a long, long time. And we had great conversations, and this was, you know, about 19—we started probably 97, 96, finished it in actually 2000. And really spent a lot of time going to neighborhoods, going around the whole city, talking about what we should do. And I thought that, that government should involve citizens. We need to hear what their needs are, what their wants are, what their dreams are, what would keep families located in Des Moines, and what would make them prosper. And so we talked to a lot of people about that. I know that I got some pushback early on from former city officials saying it involved too much citizen input. And I thought, boy, who do we work for if we don't work for the citizens? I mean, this is about them. This is about how they feel about this city, not how we do. And so about 2001, I decided to run for city council. And George Flagg was retiring, and so I ran for his at-large seat. And then year later, Preston Daniels said he wasn't going to run for mayor again, and so I was the last entry into the, to that race, but ran in an open seat for mayor. And
been there since.
Here I sit.
Yeah, here.
But more importantly, I think that that we have tried to have a city council and a city government that has become ever more transparent. We have meetings with the citizens. We talk about our budget. We talk about whether it be the operational side or the capital improvement side. This is what we're doing. Get input back. Make sure they do it. Not only do I do it, but our city council members, we go to neighborhood meetings. We get as much input as we can. You know, sometimes it's painful. Sometimes there are people that, that don't love everything that's going on in this city. They're frustrated by floods, they're frustrated by potholes, they're frustrated by the library hours, they're frustrated by, you know, a lot of things. And so I think it's incumbent upon us to be open and honest and transparent about what we're doing and how we're doing it and how we're spending taxpayer dollars, because really we're government in your face.
Yeah, all the time.
It's different than Washington. It's different than the State House. Every single day, they're not looking for us to take a break or go on strike or do anything else. They expect Des Moines safety, police and fire to be there every single day. They expect parks to be open and clean. They expect us to be able to make sure that the libraries are open and the streetlights work and everything else happens. And when we don't, we
hear about it. Yeah.
Whether it's in the embers or it's at the grocery store, or it's at church, or it's just walking up and down the street, it really is a responsibility that causes you to need to deliver, have to deliver, and should deliver to our citizens every day.
You just mentioned something about the 2020 plan. That's next year.
That's right.
And so how would you grade that from the original intent? Okay, this is what we want to be by the year 2020. How have we done?
Well, it's ever evolving. And the 2020 plan that was laid out required us to write a whole new set of codes and other things, and whether it's zoning codes or policies. And at the time, we were in sort of a structural deficit and they laid off a lot of people, including the Community Development Department that would have implemented the plan and wrote those codes. So we're in the process now of finishing up doing a new code rewrite, and that didn't get done after that vision of the 2020 plan. But I think the 2020 plan was a kickoff to get us started down the right path to be really inclusive. And, you know, again, every single year, it used to happen, we do our budget work, you know, and at 7:30 in the morning, and I experienced that sitting in George Flagg's old seat, you know, as at-large city council person. And I thought we needed to do this at a variety of times. So we go out with our budget, and we'll be doing it starting here shortly and talking to our citizens about what we do. We also do annual surveys, you know, and get citizen appreciation. And actually, it's biannual, so every other year we do it. But we want to know what people think. How are you feeling about the parks? How are you feeling about the streets? How are you feeling about the police, the fire, the everything? And get as much feedback as we possibly can.
You know, I was with you not too very long ago when the mayor of New York visited.
True.
Des Moines. And he said something, and you just parroted some of exactly what he was talking about. You know, when you're a senator or a congressman or you work at the state house as a legislator, even if you're the governor, you are insulated somewhat from those who are being governed. And
it gives you great opportunity to dodge reality, you know.
And Bill de Blasio says, he said, you don't understand. I am on 24/7. If a pothole needs fixing or if a light bulb is out, I'm the guy. I hear all of this stuff. It's not that you take a vacation, because it's always there. And I don't think, at the end of the day, many people realize that. Because you're the chief operating officer of the largest city in Iowa, and you don't get away.
Well, actually, I'm chief executive officer. The operations, we have a city administrator manager that helps me do the day-to-day operations. But
and you have staff, and you have all that stuff, but who's the point guy when you're walking down the street?
Well, it's the mayor, and it's the city council. I mean, they don't hesitate to look us up, and me especially. And it's sort of interesting, and not only is it city operations, in addition to that, you know, I get called about school issues. I get called, why'd you lay off 27 teachers? Why'd you do this? Why'd you do that? And sometimes you have to educate the public about the difference between the independent community school district and the city. And unlike some cities around the country that actually do control the schools, City of Des Moines does not. But we constantly try to find ways to work with the school district and satisfy that issue. But it is funny that a lot of people, and whether it's city work, school district work, or even the county, I get calls about Broadlands Hospital, and I get calls about a variety of things that really isn't in our bailiwick, but the expectation is they know we're there 365 days a year and hopefully available 24 hours a day, and they don't hesitate to call or stop on the street and tell us what they're thinking.
And you are a most recognizable mayor, by the way, so that it's pretty easy to pick you out of a crowd. Our guest, ladies and gentlemen, is the mayor of Des Moines. His name is Frank County. He's been mayor for 16 years. I want to just ask you a question that has just surfaced, and that was the stunning and disheartening and terrible news about Bill Stowe with the Des Moines Waterworks, suffering from an aggressive form of cancer. Bill is not only is he a friend, you know, but he has been the face of so many disasters here, but also he's been the face of so many opportunities here. What are your thoughts about this?
You know, Bill and I have worked together for all the years I've been on the city council, and quite frankly, even when I was on planning and zoning, he gave me a lot of insights, but most importantly, we worked together so closely through the floods of 2008 and 2010, And we did so many press conferences, but essentially trying to let citizens know every single day, often twice a day, with press conferences, what was going on, what the circumstances were, what was going on at Sailorville, what NOAA said, what the Corps of Engineers said, what the weather predictions were looking like, and what we tried to let citizens know, is it condition yellow, or we're moving to orange, we're moving to red, we're going to evacuate this area or that area, and, what happened. And, of course, in 2008 when the levee breached,
right.
Boy, I've got to tell you, all of our hearts were broken as we had worked so hard with so many volunteers and the National Guard in there working with us in Public Works and Bill and the team at the city working so hard to think it. I have fond memories of Bill. I will tell you that, there were times when he and I didn't agree on every single thing, but that's not expected. I mean, he would present a set of facts and say, here's where I am on this, and then I'd have to, tell him where I was on some of these issues, and we'd work out something that we think was in the best interest of the citizens. And I think that in his heart of hearts and in his mind, that's where he's been all along. He's always tried to do the right thing for this city, whether it's for the water department or it's Public Works or when he managed human resources. His life has evolved, and I got to tell you, a brighter guy I haven't run across. I mean, you talk about an individual. Remember when he was going to apply to be the Public Works director and looked like he had a chance to get it and said, what do I need? And they said, well, on top of your law degree and your other graduate degrees, you probably need to be an engineer. And he did it. He went off and did it.
I know.
And
he's a remarkable man.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And when you said the word bright, he is a brilliant man. And I sometimes don't think people realize that, how well-educated he is and how his abilities have transcended so many different jobs here in the city. That brings me to another question then. As we take a look at is the city of Des Moines better prepared for issues? I mean, we're having terrible flooding in eastern or western Iowa, in Nebraska, and we're seeing our climate evolve, I think. And so the question, first of all, is Des Moines better prepared for where we are today relative to flooding?
Well, compared to where we were, 20, 30 years ago, the answer would be yes. But as you pointed out, it's an ever-changing circumstance. And, the incidence of extreme events, big rainfall, big snowfall, is so much more frequent than it has been in the past. We have to look at the future a little differently. And as we look at the last 40 years, for instance, of data that's out there regarding the... Should we quickly order a
bite to eat? Let's do that. Yeah, let's go ahead. Joyce is here. Hey, Joyce, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
So how long have you been here at Jesse's Inn?
I've been here a little over 11 years.
You guys are all long-termers. I think it's fabulous. It really is.
Fabulous.
All right. So we're gonna make an order here, and the menu looks absolutely delicious. I'll let the mayor go first. Mr. Mayor?
I'm going to do the BLT.
Okay.
And then I'd like to have a side salad, and I'll do it with...
Famous house dressing?
House dressing.
Creamy garlic?
Yep.
Anything to drink?
I'll just do water.
Okay.
There it is. Joyce has got it under control. I'm going to do the burger without cheese.
Okay.
And, of course, I'll do the fries. Unlike the mayor. I would like that medium is fine.
Okay. We'll get your order set. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joyce. So, we've been improved after the breach of the levees up in the Birdland area. Of course, that happened. It helped get us a little bit of pressure on the Corps of Engineers in Congress to begin to flood the relook at our whole levee system. And so we got the opportunity to do that in looking at data of the flow of the Des Moines and the Raccoon, and principally past the confluence of those two rivers down off of Southeast 6th. We measure that, and to look at the change in the flow over the last 40 years, it has gone from 59,000 cubic feet per second at the 100-year flood level to today at that same level. It's 100, and well, the last time it was measured about 2010, it's 107,500, so it's almost double. And which is a little scary when the velocity picks up that much, because it's telling us a story,
right,
not only about the flood possibilities, but also, as we were talking about the Des Moines Water Works and Mr. Stowe, they measure every single day. They look at the water, and they have to decide what to do with it. And soil particulate is one of the biggest things that they have to take out of the water, in addition to herbicides and pesticides and fertilizers and nitrates and phosphates and all that stuff. And to see the flow of that and the increase in certain times of the year of those kind of things in the water tells a story that is important not only to the citizens of Des Moines, but quite frankly to all the citizens of Iowa. You know, we have to protect our natural resources. Fresh water is a valuable, valuable commodity. And we need to protect that and make sure that we have it for future generations. But quite frankly, I'm a little worried about the future of agriculture. Over that same 40-year time frame, Iowa State University reached a study three, 4 years ago that told us that we've eroded 50% of our topsoil in the last 40 years. That's scary, and it tells a story that repeats itself. Talking about books, I don't know if you've ever read the book Collapse by Jared Diamond. It talks about different civilizations that have collapsed, the Anastasis, Easter Islands, and the story often is the same. They use up their resources. The problem that we have now with the expansion in population, we have nowhere else to go. So for future generations, we have to protect our resources, and it's incumbent on leaders, and often it falls on local government, to make sure we protect those resources every single day and engage our citizens in looking at ways we're doing it. And we're doing that through departments in the city today, whether it's working through parks or public works. We're trying to figure out how do we get people to capture rainwater, either in rain barrels or rain gardens. And the city today will share, and we're looking at changing the policy, but we'll share up to $4,000, 50%. So if you and on your lawn decide to put in a rain garden or put out four or five rain barrels, and it costs you up to $4,000, the city will participate 50% up to $2,000. So we're trying to do what we can do to make sure that we protect this city, we protect those downstream, because, you know, they say the golden rule of flooding and the environment is don't do something to those downstream that you don't want the people upstream to do to you.
Yeah, and that is really one of those things, you know. I remember talking with Bill Stowe, and he was telling me about it's $7,000 a day to clean the water that comes into the Des Moines Water Works, and that's a huge amount of money. And then, of course, we have to put it in holding tanks, and all of this has a real downstream effect, because there are people downstream of Des Moines that don't have the technology or the wherewithal or the ability to clean their water.
Well, and one of the interesting things on that issue is the nitrate removal.
Yeah.
So we remove nitrates, and of course, one of the big pushbacks that some people have is, well, but you put them right back in the water. That's true. The problem with it is we're required to do that. The state won't allow us to do anything other than put it back in the water. So we've got to find a different solution, because when we take something like nitrates out of the water, they should be disposed of in some sort of other way or used to benefit agriculture.
Yeah, and there's technology out there that looks at those things.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, but to require us to permit to put it right back in, I think is wrong. And our legislature ought to look at those issues. And home rule is important. And sometimes we come up with solutions that work best for our citizens, not only for the citizens of the city of Des Moines, but those downstream from us. And it's all of us working together to going to make a better solution. But quite frankly, we got to do it every single day. And it's a little tough when, you know, home rule sometimes goes off the page.
Well, you know, we don't do politics on the Business News Hour.
No, we don't.
But I just, you just opened up a subject. And I want to just kind of look at this for a second. Oh, boy, I don't know. Home rule. I know my friends who are of the majority party at the State House are all about local control and local decision-making and home rule, except sometimes when it comes to something like this or minimum wage or other things that fall under the purview of cities and counties, and then all of a sudden the state wants to claw those things back. Right. Sometimes it doesn't make any sense. I don't know, you know, how you can be on both sides of your mouth, which brings me to question number two on that. And you didn't say this, but I got to bring this up because, again, we don't do politics.
Right.
But you have to be, you're not elected as a Democrat or a Republican or an independent or a libertarian or whatever it happens to be, the drink of the day. You're the mayor of everybody. How does that work?
Well, I think that's the way it needs to be. And I wish it was the way it operated in Washington and operated on the Hill in the state of Iowa. We don't and shouldn't be divisive. We all serve all of our citizens, whether they wear a red tie or a blue tie or a green tie or no tie at all. We serve them all the time. And we have to look at their best interests and the greater good. And you can't serve all the people by being divisive and making it us, no matter who the us is, against the them, whoever the them is. When somebody calls me, I never have asked them whether they're a Republican or a Democrat. If they've got a pothole, we're going to try to take care of it. If they've got a busted up sidewalk, we're going to get out there and figure out what the problem is and try to take care of it. If they've got an emergency call and they've got an issue around EMS coming to their doorstep, we never ask them what party they're in. We send the most available unit, and that's how government should operate.
One of the things, to get back on economics if we can for just a moment, here in the greater Des Moines area, and specifically the city of Des Moines, I remember when I came here a number of years ago and thought to myself, you know, this is a really beautiful town, but you can roll a bowling ball down Grand Avenue at about 7 o'clock in the evening. It's a ghost town down here. And I always thought to myself, you know, wouldn't it be much more inhabitable or more viable if there were people living in Des Moines? How's that changed over your tenure?
Well, back to, you know, some of our discussions about the East Village and some of the things that have happened over there. But the important thing is, I think that the urban renewal plan that, you know, started evolving in the 50s and in early 60s, that kind of cleaned out everything, had reduced the population in the core of downtown, and that essentially is from the western edge, you know, where Fluor Drive and Grand and Ingersoll and Locust all come together, all the way to the Capitol, from 235 down to the river. That sort of is the core. We only had about, I would say, 1,800 people living in downtown Des Moines, 1,800. Today, we've got 18,000 people living in downtown Des Moines, and it has improved the vibrancy of downtown and made it downtown not just a place to go work, but a place to live, a place to prosper, a place to have an urban style of life that's unavailable, and quite frankly, an awful lot of people say unavailable anywhere between, let's say, Chicago and maybe Denver or even further west, but an urban lifestyle. People can't believe what has happened to Des Moines over the last 15 years.
And one of those people that can't believe that, and we're seeing it right now in Des Moines, the caucuses are happening. And
all that media that follows them around.
Yeah. What do they say?
Well, they get snapshots of Des Moines. And I remember all the way back to the 80s, I was in charge of the downtown group called Downtown Des Moines, Inc. And we were trying to think of things for them to do, but we had sort of a 9-to-5 existence in downtown. And, of course, the hotels would be open, but they would pretty much close up after the newscast. And all these people would go to a hotel room and go to bed. But now they say, you know, there's restaurants, there's live entertainment, there's stuff to do. We can ride bikes, we can connect all around. I mean, you guys have expanded. How did it happen? And again, it's all of us working together to plan to make that happen, Republicans and Democrats, by the way. But to see a brighter vision, a better tomorrow, and that involves people living in the downtown area, in the most urban area in the state of Iowa. And it is recognized by those people that come in here, and they see it, and they've experienced it, and they have taken that snapshot from 88 till today. Here we are, 2019, and they can't believe
what's happened. And many of those same people come back every 4 years and
Absolutely.
Go, what in the world have you guys, what's the secret sauce?
We're not going to give them all the secrets.
All right. Frank County, ladies and gentlemen, the mayor of Des Moines is with us as we go out to lunch at the original Jesse's Embers on Ingersoll. I want to ask you something about the Des Moines Regional Airport. Mr. Foley and I have had conversations about the expansion opportunities, and I know that ridership, if you will, or individuals that are coming through the Des Moines International Airport continues to rise. They just had the largest increase in years of people coming back and forth. And there's a real call to expand that and to make put in a new terminal and new runways and all of these kinds of things. Lots of that has to do with the federal government and whether or not we're going to get funding for that. How important has this resurgence of the Des Moines International Airport been to the city of Des Moines?
Oh, it's important because not only for Des Moines, but our whole region, because people come and go much more easily. There's direct flights to so many places around this country that didn't exist. And so now we're seeing over 2 million people coming and going, as you pointed out of our airport. So we are getting almost to capacity in terms of being able to serve it. I think we can do it for maybe a few more years, but we're also in a terminal that is really reached its useful age termination, because you know, it was created back in the 40s, and they expanded it, and it has really served us well. But today, giving all how you have to handle luggage, how you have to do the TSA, inspections of each passenger, and what it is that how we facilitate moving people quickly in and out of our airport in these rather almost antiquated facilities is an issue. But to your point, we're almost totally funded out of FAA and landing and takeoff fees. And so we have to figure out what to do. And this is not an inexpensive project. I mean, this is hundreds of millions of dollars. And, you can't exactly do it on the cheap, because we're doing it for the next 40 to 50 years, planning for the future of Des Moines and quite frankly, of Iowa. And as we watch about the expenses and how you have to operate an airfield, there probably aren't going to be a lot more places that have commercial service in and out. So we've got to make sure that we can handle the expansion here. It's good for business. I mean, we've got the third largest insurance center in the world is Des Moines, Iowa. And we have a lot of comings and goings of people needing to access those things and get in and out of this very important insurance headquarters. And all the other businesses that are around it that not only support that. So you got financial services and IT and all kinds of other things, Facebook and Apple and Microsoft.
Goes on and on, doesn't it?
They're all moving in here. And part of it, by the way, back to the cost of water, cost of electricity, cost of utilities is predictable, and it's generally less than any place else in the country.
One of the things about all of this, and we can talk about infrastructure all day long, but one of the realities is if every year we put this off with regard to the Des Moines International Airport or whatever the infrastructure project is, it gets more expensive.
Right.
And it'd be best to just do it and get the funding and make it happen rather than push this off 4 or 5 years because it's going to cost us all more money.
Well, we were hopeful that the federal government was looking at infrastructure over the last couple of years. Unfortunately, it hasn't moved forward quite at the pace that we would have all dreamt of when it started, but let's hopefully it's going to happen. There maybe needs to be an increase in some of those boarding fees, go from $4 to $8, I believe, is what they're looking at. And if Congress would help us in pass that, it would not only just benefit Des Moines, it'd benefit air service across this country. And, of course, it's everything from the quality of the service, the quality of the oversight through the FAA, making sure everything is safe, the inspection of the aircraft, all the things that need to occur. We need to make it happen, not only for today, but moving forward in the future to make sure we're the best service in the world.
And you know, outside of the airport, I had a conversation not too very long ago with a former governor and former Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, and we were talking about infrastructure as a whole for the state of Iowa, for example, and for places like Des Moines, and how to put that on the radar of all of these candidates that are currently running for president, because that does mean jobs, it does mean opportunities, and not just for Des Moines, but the entire region and area. And so infrastructure is something that maybe you can put a bug in the ear of the next candidate that comes through.
Let's hope so.
Let's hope so. All right, I want to talk just a little bit about a couple of other things. Where do I want to go? Well, okay, let's talk about the future of transportation, because that's a big deal. I mean, we have DART, the regional transportation entity here in Des Moines, and Elizabeth and her crew down there are doing lots of new things and ways to do outreach into the suburbs that surround Des Moines. But there's also an interesting thing happening, and we're seeing this happen all over the United States. And Mr. Wiggins, who's with the city of Des Moines, who's also in charge of traffic and roads and those types of things, we had a conversation not long ago about how road diets are a positive thing, about how maybe one-way streets aren't necessarily the best thing for business, and that there's a real movement afoot to take a look at how people get from point A to point B. Metropolitan Planning Organization, Todd Ashby, and those folks are looking really seriously about how we move people from point A to point B. Where's Des Moines on all that?
Well, it's an interesting subject, because I think that our city and our planners have looked at it really hard in the city of Des Moines, and we've looked at corridors and nodes that are important for public transportation, and specifically Des Moines Area Rapid Transit, DART. We have to look at how do we make corridors predictably successful for DART. And what you need to do, generally speaking, and talking not only here but to those who are experts around the country, you need to densify some of those corridors. And so people can walk to and from the bus. And so on, let's say, 3-4 blocks either side of a corridor, whether it's Ingersoll or whether it's University or whether it's East 14th Street or whatever the main route is, we have to look at those and how is it that we plan. we took that idea in working with, quite frankly, the federal government, and when Tom Vilsack was Secretary of Agriculture, looking at the broader sense of how we plan for the future. And as we look at public transportation, you need to plan to make it successful. And, you know, often it doesn't take a genius to figure out. Sending a bus down a road that is a collector for a bunch of cul-de-sacs is probably not going to be a great way to hope that DART or any public transportation is going to be successful, because it doesn't have the density to support it. And so if, you know, we're going to need to and want to have public transportation, then we need to plan what housing looks like, what shopping areas look like, how we connect those, and how we plan for that. So I think we have to do a better job at looking at that regionally. In the Tomorrow Plan, which was essentially a sustainability plan for central Iowa, was to bring that together and was run through the MPO. And I think that we need to constantly update it and look at it and encourage all of our, we'll say, contiguous communities to plan together, to think together, to work together, to make sure that we have transportation that's affordable, that's reliable for everything. Now, I will tell you, on the other side, we haven't gone here, but I might as well just throw this in. As we think about the environment and how we reduce CO2, the largest in expanding emitter of greenhouse gases is transportation. So we have to look at the future of transportation, whether it's electric vehicles or whether it's getting more people to use mass transportation. And, oh, by the way, probably having those be electric is really a step in the right direction. We had a discussion recently around that at DART, where there's some monies that are coming through the state from a settlement with Volkswagen on their diesel emissions and how they apparently misrepresented those, and so they paid
hefty fines.
So those are going to be available to go out to different transportations through the state, and so the DART is going to get some funds. You know, to me, our best move, and we had a long discussion about it, and hopefully as we look forward, DART has ordered a handful of electric buses, about 7 of them. Here's an opportunity to replace at least 5 more. And to me, we ought to make a large step at making and electrifying the whole fleet and looking at ways to generate electricity, whether it be solar, whether it be wind, or a affordable hookup with MidAmerican. But look at the future and how we do it. We can't commit to old technology that we know is horribly polluting. Not only the particulate matter for public health issues, but to the environment. And let's look at solutions for all that. So it's interesting how you tie a bow around this, and you can tie an awful lot of these issues together that affects the future of Des Moines and Iowa and the country and, quite frankly, the world.
You know, when we talk about taking a look at the past, Rocky Spizzotto out at Waveland Golf Course, have right in front of his building out there, the Waveland, is an old pole that used to be the electrical termination point for the old trolley system that ran up and down University
yep.
Avenue. And, you know, we are talking in 2019 about electronic buses, and we had all this stuff at one time, but in the move towards progress, we ripped everything out.
Well, and there was a competition. And again, sometimes we don't look at the consequences of some of our decisions to the long term. And I think when we made that and General Motors acquired an awful lot of those bus manufacturing companies, and they switched them from electric to gas. And so you had the automotive industry, you had the tire people, you had the oil people all coming together, and electricity at that time lost out. And you know, supposedly tearing down all those electric lines that powered those buses was going to make things look better, feel better, appear
better. And here
better.
We are.
And here we are today trying to say, maybe that wasn't our best
decision. Maybe that wasn't the best idea. His name is Frank County, ladies and gentlemen, the mayor of the great city of Des Moines. Let's turn the page here just a moment. Let's talk just a second about housing. Now, in Des Moines, we just mentioned 17,000 people versus 1,500 or 1,700 people. And there's more on the way. The Hubble Group has just recently released their whole study for north of the downtown area. There's these agri communities that are being talked about. Living is really changing, isn't it, in the city of Des Moines?
You know, it is. You know, we see an interest in the certainly the millennials and some of those empty nesters.
Who are, interestingly enough, living side by side and finding out that they have more in common than they do in difference.
Exactly. And the interest expanding into the downtown area as of for instance. But most importantly, I am so amazed to talk to some of the younger people who are architects, engineers, attorneys, doctors. They don't own cars. And it's amazing to me. Or if they do, they take public transportation or they ride a bike. And if they live downtown, talking to some of those, they said, no, I invest in experience. I'm not investing in a car. It's so expensive to do all that stuff. And so we, for instance, rather than spend $30,000, $40,000 on a new car and pay it for the next 4 or 5 years, I went to Portugal, or I went to Australia, or I went to here or there. Those are experiences that probably you and I didn't have as young people. But that's what an awful lot of the young people are doing. They want to see the world. They want to feel the world. They want to experience the world. And it's absolutely been amazing to watch this city transform.
It has been. We are out to lunch at Jesse's Embers with the mayor of the city of Des Moines, Frank County. Frank, that was a pretty good meal, huh?
Not bad. Bacon, lettuce, and tomato. Can't think of a better lunch.
And a salad for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was doing the fries, man. It's probably not a good thing. All right, we need to wrap this up. You've got a meeting to go to, and we've got to get the news hour up and out the door. I want to just talk about economics in a city like Des Moines. And we've talked in great detail about the environment, and we've talked about the quality of life, and we've talked about opportunities for people. You know, our 25 to 34 year olds, people are coming here because of all the cool jobs and all those things. Can we just take a minute and we polish the stone about Des Moines all the time. When we look at the community, where do we need to go to work at? Where are the things that you see as mayor of Des Moines that you'd like, you know, these are two or three things that I would like to see done in this community so that the quality of life is better for everybody? What do you think?
Well, I think we have to start with one of my favorite subjects, the environment. We have to think about it for the future. How do we think about transportation? How do we think about the homes in which we live, whether it's an apartment or whether it's, a single-family home? Is it built in a fashion that is environmentally friendly and uses less utilities? Is it energy efficient? There's an awful lot of houses in the city of Des Moines. We've got nearly 70,000 single-family homes in the city of Des Moines, many of which are over 50 years old. They have no insulation. They need new windows, probably new doors. We got to find ways to improve those homes so that people can afford to live in them, not only on a first-cost basis and make their mortgage payments, but also pay their utility bills. Now, one of the next questions for me is, how do we get them to do that? What's the opportunity
for
them?
How do we fund that?
What are the jobs? And how do we prepare young people of the next generation that are going to be the leaders, that are going to be the workers, they're going to work in the insurance companies, work in the Firestone Tire, work in the manufacturing companies, work at the banks, work everywhere that the jobs are in Des Moines, and earn a living wage and be able to afford a great place to live and provide a good living for their family, their partner, their offspring, if they choose to have them. And what does that look like? And how do we provide a great place? I think that we've worked hard and we're going to keep doing it, listening to citizens about how Des Moines itself provides a culture, a way of life that everybody enjoys. That it's not just, one set of people at one income level, but that everybody can use the Riverwalk, go to Gray's Lake, go to a library, experience the sculpture garden, get on a bike and connect a 300 miles worth of trails off highway and not fear for their lives every single day that they're out there, but safe places. So we want safety, we want an environmentally friendly place, healthy place to live, and we want good jobs, and we want, I think, young people trained and ready for a career, trained, ready for higher education. And that's part of working with our public and private schools and Drake University and Des Moines University and Grandview and Des Moines Area Community College and everybody that helps create an opportunity for a future for our next generation. So,
Frank County, ladies and gentlemen, Mayor of Des Moines, thank you, Frank, for sitting down and visiting with me. As I said at the very outset, I've wanted to do this for a long time, and we have just missed connections. And I learned a lot about you, and I hope the listeners have learned a lot about what makes Frank County tick. There is a reason they call you the environmental mayor. And it's curious that we ended our conversation almost where we started that conversation, and that was back about how we treat the planet that we live on and what we can do to extend this not just to the next generation, but to seven generations and beyond.
Well, and we're all in it together. And it doesn't matter where you come from, doesn't matter the color of your skin, doesn't matter your religion, it doesn't matter your age. We're all working together to make a better place. And I think we're working hard to make that happen in Des Moines. And I think that's one of the reasons why Des Moines receives accolades nationally and internationally for the work that we've done together.
Thank you, sir.
Once again, that was Mayor Frank County of Des Moines. Our thanks to Jesse Zembers for giving us some space to have our conversation. It is always, I mean, always great to be there. Well, that's a wrap. Look for more about our Out to Lunch segments in the coming weeks. For all the crew that puts this together each day, Chap Ramsey's in charge of production. Sales and marketing falls to Aaron Libby. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease. And the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett from Jam Good Productions, exclusively for the Business News Hour. For all those folks and for Mayor Frank County, my name is Michael Libby. Have yourself a wonderful evening. Be safe, be well, be careful, most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.